Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Listeners, thank you so much for joining me on the Negotiations Ninja podcast. You've got Mark here today. We have the amazing and wonderful Claudia Winkler on the show. She is going to be talking to us all about legal negotiations, actually. Claudia is a negotiation trainer and coach, primarily working out of Europe, but she travels all over the world to teach law firms and their lawyers how to negotiate. I met with her last time I was in Vienna. We had a wonderful conversation talking about negotiation training, coaching, all that kind of fun stuff. And ever since then, we've developed a friendship and I loved having her on the show. She is amazing at what she does. And if you are a law firm and you are looking for good negotiation training, there's really only one person that you should be going to, and that's Claudia. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy this. I think you will take lots of good notes. It was fantastic. Enjoy. Claudia, how are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Well, we made it. Thank God. We made it to this final point. I know we've been playing with our calendars a bit back and forth, and here we are, finally.
Thank God for lockdown time. Now everything's getting done now.
Yeah, everything's getting done. Everyone has time back on their calendars.
Especially over long distance.
Yeah. Hey, for the listeners who don't know you and don't know about you, can you give the listeners some background as to who you are and what you do?
Well, my background is in law. Don't judge me. We all make mistakes. I did my very first law degree and then my doctorate here in Austria. So I'm located in Europe. But I did come to the U.S. after that. I was on a Fulbright and I did my postgraduate up in Massachusetts. And the challenge for me always was what to do with this law degree now. So I'm a big believer of not trying to fit people into careers, but rather matching careers for people. So about 10 years of my life was sort of an exploration of what to do with my skills, what to do with that law degree. What is it that makes me stand out in the kind of skill combination I have, and how could I best apply that in a job that really benefits people? And it was at during my time in Boston when I found out that negotiation seemed to be my calling. I was at the Harvard Negotiation Project during my postgraduate there, and that's what really hammered it home to me, that is a skill it's such a meta skill for people, especially for lawyers who are trained so much in knowledge, but not so much in how to really apply it in everyday life. So that was the time when 6 years ago now, I decided to go into negotiation training full time and start helping lawyers and other people. Lawyers are people too. We have to be careful here. Lawyers and other people become more effective. So that's the last 6 years I've been traveling around the world and training negotiation skills full time.
Amazing. That's why I'm so excited to have you on the show, because it's not often that we get a lawyer on the show, let alone someone who's also great at negotiation on the show to talk about how lawyers negotiate. Maybe I'll kick us off there. I mean, you travel all over the world and you see lawyers in all different areas. What differences are you seeing in law negotiations versus other negotiations?
I wouldn't say a lot of negotiations are necessarily different. I mean, for lawyers, just as for everyone else, negotiations are the basic means to reaching any of your goals. The difference just is that for law, it's so expected, like an outside person would always expect that lawyers would be superior negotiators. So there's a problematic divide in the perception of the general population that every lawyer, by definition, must be an excellent negotiator. Whereas the sad reality is that lawyers don't get trained in negotiation skills much more than anyone else does. I mean, for the top US law schools, there are negotiation courses now. They're not mandatory. You can take them if you're lucky, you're at a good law school, then you have that offer. But for most of European law schools, most of the rest of the world, other than Australia, maybe, negotiation isn't even a skill, it's being taught to lawyers. So they don't get trained at it, and there's a huge expectation from the public to have lawyers at your side to be excellent negotiators. So that brings up a problem, because it in the end, clients are realizing, hold on, this is not going as well as I thought it would, and my lawyer is sometimes even hindering what I'm trying to achieve here. So clients start not wanting to bring their lawyers to their negotiations because they find them rather destroying value than building value. And that's become a huge challenge, because now the bias is against lawyers being good negotiators. I think there was a hint also when you said, and it's great to have a lawyer on who's a good negotiator. So I'm kind of guessing you were hinting into that direction. So that's the difference between the relationship of lawyers with negotiations and others.
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree. I think there's definitely a common misconception when it comes to legal work and the ability to negotiate. I mean, thank God the legal profession has you. Otherwise, you know, where would they go, really, more than anything else? Now, you brought up a really important point in that not many lawyers maybe necessarily know how to negotiate. And so the question then becomes, when I'm choosing a lawyer, is that a skill that I need to be looking for and asking for? And then how would I even determine that if I have to hire a lawyer?
I've been thinking about that quite a few times. What would I do if I had to choose a lawyer and I needed them to be more than someone that just fights through a simple case, but if I needed them to be a good negotiator? And I came to the conclusion that I would actually, in an interview, I would ask them, like maybe jokingly, but say, do you like to negotiate? Because the one sad reality that I've found, and this is the same across the world, it doesn't matter if you ask this in the US or in India, in Brazil, in Australia, if you ask people in the room that are in my workshops who of you likes to negotiate, hardly ever, there's more than 10, maybe 20% of hands up. And these are all lawyers. All of us on the outside would think they love to negotiate. They do this for a living. But the truth is actually most lawyers even do not want to negotiate. And everything we don't like, I learned French in school and I never became really good at it because I didn't enjoy it. 8 years now and I couldn't order a croissant at the cafe. It's quite embarrassing. And it's the same with negotiation skills. Everything you don't enjoy, you will never get really good at it. So I found that that is a question that I would ask any lawyer. And then I once they say yes or no, I'd also ask them, and what's your approach? Because some lawyers are pretty one-sided, let's say, and just trying to get the best outcome for their own client. But the more effective lawyers are those who look at things from two perspectives and look at how can this be a win-win solution and how can we make this work for both sides. So I would honestly just be very blunt and ask these questions next time I need a lawyer.
Fantastic. Where do you see negotiations derail a lot with the legal work that you're doing right now? And why are they derailing?
Well, there's possibly lots of reasons. I think one of the big ones is, this might sound weird, but one of the big ones is reciprocity. Mm. And I think that's not just true for legal negotiations, but negotiations in general. What I mean by that, reciprocity can be a fantastic thing. We all have, as human beings, we have these mirror neurons. So we will generally reciprocate what the other side is doing, how the other side is treating us. The problem with negotiations then is we don't only reciprocate positive emotions and positive behavior, but especially much we reciprocate anything negative. Mm. So the moment the other side starts putting up an ego, the moment the other side starts becoming aggressive or becoming unfair or treating me without respect, that very same moment I snap into that same behavior. And that's when you allow the spiral to start moving downwards, because that's the moment when you start losing value, when you don't share information, when you do not find creative solutions, when you have stopped thinking about creative win-win agreements. So reciprocity, the fact that people are getting aggressive, the moment one person does, the rest will join. I think that's one of the key problems that are happening.
Is that a lack of training to try and understand sort of like their own emotions or to understand sort of what that mirroring is? Why is it that they're having trouble like managing getting angry? For example, like if I saw someone getting flustered with me, I mean, naturally, I think we get into this like fight or flight sort of scenario, and it takes a lot of discipline and struggle, I think, to really manage our own emotions during that. How do we do that? How do we teach people to do that?
I think the very first most important step is simply awareness, because we're not realizing, or with a lot of people I see that they're not realizing what it does to their negotiation. Like, you will have seen this many times. You watch a mock negotiation or real negotiation, in that first 30 seconds, or at least the first 2 minutes, you can tell where that negotiation is going based on the demeanor, based on the language, based on the body language that these two negotiators will apply. So that people are not aware how drastically these even little moves and words and postures will have. So if they were aware what kind of a spiral they're kickstarting and what power they have, if they don't allow themselves to be dragged down by the negative way their counterparty is negotiating, that is the only power you have, because you can never change the other side. The only thing that you have control over is your own behavior as a negotiator, and you have to keep that power. Otherwise, you've given away all power in your negotiation. So I think that that awareness is lacking big time. So it's still hard to do it when you are aware of it. And I see that again and again myself, but just having that awareness is the first step, and then you can work on it.
How do we develop that awareness? I think one of the big issues that I see a lot with training, whenever I'm delivering training, and I know that you've probably seen the same thing whenever you're delivering training, is, you know, people get it and they're like, okay, yeah, I should watch out for this awareness. But to try and get people to practice that awareness, I find the most challenging thing. And so I think for me, the only thing that I've said to people is, look, the only way to get better at this is to do it at scale, to practice as much as you can. But I'd love to know how you would recommend that people potentially get over this as well and become more aware.
Certainly have to practice it at scale. So the first thing is you have to see it. So I often have people do some sort of negotiation in a fishbowl. So there's two in front of the classroom and everyone else is watching. And then in retrospect, from the outside, it's really easy to see how this escalated.
Yes.
Because both people were pushing. And
great
then
idea.
Next step, I let them get into that situation. So you might give them a good cop, bad cop scenario, where then they notice how easy it is to fall for reciprocating that aggressive behavior. Mm. And then really, yeah, as you say, you just have to keep practicing it. And it's not hard to do that. Now, you can do that at home, you can do that with your family. There's always going to be situations when you wish you would have kept your cool. Like, I practice with my sister on a regular basis if we have snappy arguments. There's nothing easier for me than to snap back, but it's much harder to take a step back and say something like, oh, what's going on? What is bothering you? Rather than firing back the same way that just got fired at me. So I think you can, if you're being conscious about it, you can practice this in so many situations. You just have to start wanting to do that.
Brilliant. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. When you're planning for a legal negotiation, what do you consider one of the most important things you can do? And is that different than a normal negotiation? I would assume that the amount of research, obviously, that you would have to do is significant. But when you're planning, what do you consider to be the most important thing?
Depends on what kind of legal situation it is, right? There's dispute situations, there's deal situations. They're very, very different. In general, you would do all of the usual things. You would look into what are the interests behind the positions. You'd look at various options. You'd look at your bargaining power. You'd look at objective criteria, all of these standards. But I think for legal negotiations, what's especially key and what's often overlooked is looking more broadly at business interests. What is it that is really the key that my client wants to get out of this? What is really in the best interest of my client? Because for so many lawyers, they've done whatever M&A deals for so long that every client that will come to them will explain their case within 3 minutes. For many lawyers, it's very clear, oh, this is what the case is. I've done this 100 times. This is what we're going to do. So what I see that sadly happens over time with that routine is that we stop probing for how are you different? How are you unique as a case? We start looking at many cases from a perspective of, oh, how is this similar to the other 99 cases that I've done before? But what we really need to do is look for how is this case unique? What sets them apart? What is really important for them? What long-term effects do they want to have? What are the business interests? Only if you look more into these drivers of the negotiation can you really go and negotiate a good deal. And I think that's a business aspect that lawyers are not necessarily trained at in law school. And that's a mindset you have to develop. And that's something you just have to stress in your preparation because it's not going to come very natural to many.
I love that, which is a really good segue to my next question about if I am now hiring a lawyer to work with me on a transaction or to figure something out, what's the best way to interact with that lawyer on an ongoing basis to make sure that they have all the information they need to make sure that they understand the business interests?
Well, the optimal way would be if you would openly share them. Yes. All these interests. So that's a challenge that in my communication workshops we talk a lot about, because lawyers keep coming back and saying, well, the client didn't tell me that this was key once the negotiation is over, and I asked them why they didn't get to the actual interest. And then I obviously tell them, well, have you considered asking? Because it's your job to ask about these interests, because the client doesn't necessarily know the difference or what information really is key to you. So if, as a client, I am aware enough that there is a difference between positions and interests and that lawyers do need to know what is underneath that legal problem that I'm bringing, that would be optimal if I can keep my lawyer as informed as possible, and hopefully they understand why this information is key. And that's also one way you can separate out who's going to be a good lawyer. Are they listening to what brings me here? Because one key issue that I see with a lot of colleagues is that, well, how do I put this nicely? The other day I asked at a keynote, who of you agrees that the legal profession are excellent listeners? And in a whole room, I had 3 hands up and the rest was giggling. So listening can be a challenge. So while you're sharing what's really key to you in a transaction, in a case, you want to make sure you have the lawyer really listening, really be interested in you and not talk about themselves. That's one way to also find out, are they going to be a good advocate for me? Just sharing as much as you can, I think, is the key for you to get the best out of.
I love that you said, from the legal side, don't assume that your client is giving you all of the information. I think also from the client side, don't assume that your lawyer understands everything, because I think sometimes we get into the mindset of like, well, it's obvious to me, so therefore it must be obvious to someone else. And that's not always the case. I think we need to overly communicate when it comes to understanding business interests and understanding sort of what the big picture here is, so that we can give people that are on our team guidance on how to act, what their roles and responsibilities are, and all that kind of stuff. And I think that too often we assume that, you know, people are going to do what we need them to do, but we haven't told them. And so, and so then they act out of character and we're surprised and we're like, hey, why didn't you do this thing? And then they say, well, we didn't know that that was an issue. And like, well, you're a lawyer. You're supposed to know.
Like, absolutely.
That, right? You're supposed to be able to tell your lawyer exactly what they need to do so they can act in your best interests.
Absolutely. And if you want to be all clear, then the best way would even to tell them how you would like to be communicated with. That's another thing I tell them. Just ask. Every client will have different preferences. Some want to be involved in every step, and others want to just hear back from you once everything is said and done. And if you treat people all in the same way, whatever your communication preference, 50% are going to be happy, 50% are going to be unhappy. So why not ask them ahead of time, get them as involved as they'd like to be, and you'll have much more happy clients and a lot better information flow.
Wild. You know, we're still sort of in the midst of this COVID thing, and it's wild and crazy out there right now. What tips would you give to the listeners on negotiating during this crisis?
It is unprecedented. So there's a couple of new challenges that come with that fact that we have nothing to compare it to. So one challenge there is that there's just no boundaries. Everything is so vague right now because we simply don't know what to compare it to or what would be the best practice now. There's no clauses in contracts for a situation like this. So you've got to be much more diligent in your preparation to see what should I do now? How much discount, for example, would I give now if I run a gym and people don't want to pay their membership now because they can't actually come in? Do I give any? Do I not give any? Do I refund it? Do I front load it? Whatever it is, you have to be much more aligned with, do your research much better and be especially aligned with your entire team. You need to make sure everyone has the same information. You need to make sure you get information often internationally for businesses, not just have your local perspective because everyone now has different information. So you need to do much more research at the moment and make sure everyone's better aligned because there is simply no precedent of how to deal with these situations. And it also means that you need to be more creative at the moment than normally you might have to be when things are a little easier, not as volatile. So getting good negotiation agreements at the moment really depends a lot on how creative you can be to think outside of your negotiation sometimes. Because whatever deal you thought you were going to have with your negotiation partner, it may not work out at the moment. And sometimes it's not enough to try and renegotiate that, but sometimes you might be better off working on your BATNA, on your best alternative to this negotiation agreement, and see what other options do I have at the moment. But for all that creativity to come, and that's my third point on what's important right now, you need to make sure you overcome some of the psychological hurdles that come with deal making at the moment. And one of the biggest hurdles is what we call loss aversion. So the fact that losses are always more painful than gains are pleasant. So if you lose $100, it hurts more than if you find $100 on the street. It's a simple comparison. So that loss aversion principle makes people fight harder in negotiations at the moment because they don't want to lose anything. And everyone feels like they're in a lose-lose scenario. So they're trying to cut their losses. No one is thinking in a positive frame at the moment about potential wins. Everyone's trying to cut their losses. So if you let yourself fall into that psychological hurdle, you are going to, well, try and split the pie and create losses for everyone rather than think creatively, think outside the box, create new opportunities. And that's a big hurdle that you need to watch out for when you negotiate in these times.
I love that. It's very insightful, especially when we got to that loss aversion part. That was brilliant. I think there's a lot of mindset around that right now. Just everyone's moving into protection mode. And I think when everyone moves into protection mode and, you know, everyone's just saying, oh, this is mine, that's yours, you know, get away. We get into this crazy scenario where we stop thinking about solutions and we only start thinking about problems. One of the problems I think I'm seeing a lot of, especially in a lot of the clients that I work with, is the enactment of force majeure in a lot of contracts right now. Can you explain to the listeners what force majeure is and how potentially this crisis could be seen as an opportunity to enact a clause like that?
You're giving me chills right now because I'm opting out to be a lawyer and you're asking me a sort of legal question. I will refer you to my lawyer for that. But I will say one thing: the challenge from a negotiator's perspective, the force with all these clauses is that nothing really fits the situation. So any clause that you'll have in a contract will not be clearly defining what am I going to do now. So no matter what clause you have in there or what that force majeure clause will say in your contract, there's no clear resolution from that. It doesn't say now what to do. So in any case, no matter how good that clause might be that you have, you will need to renegotiate it. And it will potentially mean that we will see more specific clauses. That's an interesting nuance on the legal front now, that especially in civil law countries where judges can only do what's the black letter law, and there's absolutely nothing out there for this, it will probably mean that contracts in the future will have maybe even some sort of a corona clause where we will have more details on how to deal with these situations. Because right now, whatever you have in there, no matter how it will be interpreted, it will not be good for helping you figure out what to do next. For the rest, I'll refer you to my lawyer.
Yeah, it's still, I think that's the key, right? It still has to be negotiated, right? It doesn't matter what the clause says, you've still got to negotiate something. And I think for a lot of the listeners, just obviously don't be stupid. This is not legal advice. Go and see a trained professional, go and see a lawyer, all the rest of it. But the reason I brought that up is because regardless of what the clause says, you're still going to have a discussion about it. You're still going to have a negotiation. And I think it's incredibly important that for everyone listening right now, if you're looking at your contracts right now and you're thinking to yourself, good God, how do I handle this kind of a situation? Number one, seek professional legal counsel, obviously, duh. But also, number two, don't be afraid to have a discussion with your counsel about how you're going to be negotiating this, because I think you've got to be thinking and planning about, you know, what happens after we enact a clause, or how do we deal with this after we enact a clause, or how do we negotiate the renegotiation of a specific contract? There's so much going on right now and a lot of different companies that I'm talking to about how they're going to be handling this going forward. So please, please, please make sure you go seek professional legal counsel. And also, please make sure that you get the training that you need when it comes to negotiation, which is exactly why we're having Claudia on the show. Further to that, Claudia, as we wrap up today, how can people find you online?
Well, they can find us on our webpage, www.nacademy.com, short for The Negotiation Academy, and connect with me personally on LinkedIn, on Facebook, wherever you are, Instagram. I'm just learning over here in Europe where we don't use social media as much.
Fantastic. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to Claudia's social profiles as well as her website in the show notes. Claudia, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom about legal negotiations. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.